Well, it's a real joy to be with you this morning. My name is Dan, one of the pastors here at PBC, and I get the privilege of spending a bunch of time with our SLIers this summer. So let me just second Scott's call there that we're glad to have you guys here this morning and appreciate all that you pour into us as a church community over the summer. Well, in the 1990s, one of the blockbuster Hollywood videos of the decade was Twister. Some of you remember this movie as the film in which storm chasers do the exact opposite of what normal people do. As the tornado sirens go off and everybody goes to seek shelter, they find themselves jumping in their trucks and heading out to chase the storm. I actually learned recently that Twister is my mother-in-law's favorite movie. It played on repeat in their house growing up. I don't know. She went to go see the sequel four times that came out a couple years ago in the theater. So she's a diehard. For most of us, I think storms are something that we may enjoy observing from a distance, whether it's watching them on a screen or maybe better yet, watching the lightning on the horizon as a storm off in the distance blows. Unfortunately, we don't always get to just enjoy storms from a distance. Sometimes the storms blow up onto the shores of our lives. And we find ourselves asking the question, not how do we enjoy the storm that's happening over there, but how do I weather the storm that I'm experiencing right now? This morning, as we continue our study in the Gospel of Luke, we are going to look at a story where Jesus and his disciples find themselves in the midst of the storm. And we're going to consider why it is that God sometimes allows us to experience storms, what he wants to do in us through these storms, and how these storms can ultimately point us to Jesus. We're in Luke chapter 8 this morning. We've been in Luke for about 6 months now, and if you're just joining us, welcome. We got another 12 months to go, so you got plenty of time to catch up. Luke is a long and beautiful gospel. We're in the 8th chapter, looking at verses 22 to 25. Let me begin by reading verses 22 through the first part of 24. Here's what we read. One day he, that is Jesus, got into a boat with his disciples and said to them, "Let us go across to the other side of the lake." So they set out, and as they sailed, he fell asleep. And a windstorm came down on the lake, and they were filled with water and were in danger. And they went and awoke him, saying, "Master, Master, we are perishing." The scene of our story unfolds beginning on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee, this large lake in Israel. Jesus goes out onto the storm, onto the sea with his disciples and says, "We're going to sail across to the other side, to the eastern shore." But as they make their way out into the lake and Jesus falls asleep, a massive storm blows in. This is not just a gentle breeze and a light drizzle. This is a full-on storm. These kind of storms were known for blowing through the Sea of Galilee and coming up rather quickly. Surrounded by on almost all sides by mountains, the weather would come up over the mountains and form into quite fierce storms. So it seems that Jesus and his disciples set out, perhaps with clear skies, certainly not expecting a storm, and the storm forms quickly and is just pouring down rain, and the wind is whipping. And the disciples, many of whom are actually professional fishermen, make their living by being out on this very lake, find themselves scared for their lives, crying out, "Master, Master, we are perishing." We have to ask ourselves, as we see the disciples in this situation, why is it that they find themselves in this storm? Is it because, like Jonah, they were running from God? Is the storm in their life because they were living in sin, maybe like David when he loses his firstborn son? Or like the people of Israel who continue to fall into idolatry time after time and experiences the consequences of their actions? Is that why the disciples are in this storm? No. The disciples are in this storm because they were following Jesus. "Come out on the lake with me, let's sail to the other side," Jesus said. They were right where Jesus wanted them to be. They were where they were because Jesus had invited them there. You know, we need to guard ourselves against a version of Christianity that tells us that life is going to be nothing but smooth seas and smooth sailing. Jesus never promises that following him is an invitation to an easy life. Yes, Jesus does shelter us from many storms, but Jesus never promises us that following him is the way to avoid all of the difficult things in life. Why not? I mean, why doesn't Jesus just choose to shelter us from the storms of life? Why doesn't he just keep us protected and safe in our nice little bubble? Well, it turns out that people have tried this before. In the 1990s, a group of scientists headed out to the Arizona desert to construct what was called Biosphere 2. Biosphere 2 was an experiment to see if humans could survive for an extended period of time in a totally artificial environment. Spanning several acres, this campus was completely closed off from the outside world, surrounded by these glass domes. And inside these glass domes were every kind of biosphere that you could imagine. There was everything that was needed for life to survive and even thrive within Biosphere 2, except for one thing. As time went on, the scientists noticed that the trees that were growing here had unusually narrow trunks and unusually weak wood. See, it turns out the one thing that was missing from Biosphere 2 was storms, wind pushing against the trees. Growing up in a stress-free environment, these trees never developed the resilience that they needed to actually survive in the real world. As in nature, so it is with faith. If Jesus protected us from every storm, from every challenging thing, we would never have the opportunity to experience the wind pushing against us, stress, pressure, bending us but not breaking us so that we can grow, so that we can mature. It's because of this very thing that James writes some of the most shocking words in all of the New Testament when he says this in his letter. He tells us to count it all joy, my brothers, when you face trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. See, Jesus doesn't want us to remain immature. He doesn't want us to remain underdeveloped, and so he allows storms to blow through our lives, to push against us, to bend us but not break us, so that we might become complete, mature, full grown, able to withstand the things that life throws against us. The storms that blow our way are not a threat to our safety, they are an invitation to our souls, an invitation to go deeper with God, to go deeper in faith, to grow and to develop a deeper dependency on God by his Spirit. So Jesus goes out on the lake. He calls his disciples with him. Let's go to the other side. And then the storm blows in. Now, unfortunately, storms don't automatically produce growth in us, do they? Sometimes storms sink the ship. And it seems that this is what the disciples are fearful of, right? As they're out here on the lake and water's splashing over the hull of the boat and the rain is pouring down and the wind is blowing, the boat's being tossed around, they are afraid that they are not going to make it out of this situation. And so they cry out to Jesus, "Master, Master, we are perishing." They go wake him up from the place he was sleeping on the boat. "Master, Master, we are perishing." What is it that we're supposed to think of these words from the disciples? Are they passing the test, so to speak? Are they responding in an appropriate way? It seems that their response here is mixed. On the one hand, they are afraid for their lives. They are full of fear. They are terrified. "We are perishing," they say. This is not like, oh, things are starting to get rocky. This is, oh, if something doesn't change, this might go bad. No, we are perishing. They are full of fear. They're terrified. And yet they begin, "Master, Master." In the midst of their fear, they look to Jesus as the one who might be able to step in and help them in the midst of their storm. Full of fear and yet also hints of faith in this young faith in the disciples that is still being tested by the storms of life. I love this cry of the disciples because it's just so real. It's so real to life as we experience moments of being terrified and yet looking to Jesus as the one who might be able, the only one who might be able to step in and bring salvation, a refuge from the storm. I have found myself in this situation of somewhere in between fear and faith more times than I would like to admit. A few years ago, Lindsay and I took the kids to Hawaii. And while we were there, Asher, who was 4 years old at the time, had a serious asthma attack. This was new to us. It was just kind of developing in him. And we spent the vacation in and out of the doctor's office and the emergency room. By the time it came to come home, we thought that he was stable enough to make the 5-hour flight home. And so we got on the plane, but unfortunately things didn't go as we anticipated. Lindsay and I watched Asher struggling to breathe, things getting worse by the moment. And so we pull out the nebulizer that we had brought. The doctor said, you can use this once every 4 hours. If it's any more frequently than that, bring him to the ER. After using it for the third time in an hour, we began to panic. And we called the flight attendant over to explain what was going on, and we got the answer to the question that we already knew. We were 1,000 miles from any landmass and hours from help in any direction. We were terrified. I've never been more scared than those moments, those hours on that flight, not knowing how things were going to go. And yet I found myself doing what the disciples do here in this situation. Master, Master, we are perishing. Full of fear and yet also looking to Jesus as the only one who could come and bring hope and healing in the intense storm that we were experiencing. I wonder if you've experienced something like that before, in a situation that you knew was well outside of your control, that there was nothing that you could do to calm the seas around you, thinking to yourself, we are perishing, and yet looking to Jesus with whatever seeds of faith you have and saying, Master, 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 would you come and help me? The disciples call out to Jesus. I think there's two lies that the evil one tries to plant in us in these moments of being caught in the storm, of being full of fear and yet also having elements of faith. The two lies that the evil one tries to bring first is that Jesus is not with you in the storm. The second is that Jesus is not powerful enough to do anything about it. One is a lie about presence, one is a lie about power. One says you are so alone that no one knows what you're experiencing, that no one's here with you in the midst of this, you are all alone. The other one says there is nothing that you or anyone else can do, including God, to get you out of this situation. Two lies that the evil one comes when we're experiencing storms and plants in our minds, trying to push us away from Jesus and into the place of fear, away from faith and into terror. A few years ago, one of my friends was pastoring a church in Chicago, and they had an intern who was serving with them from Kenya. And they were sitting down with their preaching team, kind of brainstorming an upcoming passage that was dealing with the power of God. And they were talking about how to talk about the power of God. And in the midst of this conversation, the Kenyan man begins kind of chuckling to himself, and the others in the room look around and say, "What's so funny?" Here's how he responds. "In Africa, we always talk about God's power because we feel so powerless. In America, you always talk about God's presence because you feel so alone." I wonder if there's some of us here today who feel powerless. Like you don't have what it takes to navigate life. You don't have the resources necessary to deal with the challenge that you're in. And if that's you this morning, you need to hear these words. Jesus is able. God is powerful. He is the miracle worker. He is the one with all power who can step into your storm and bring deliverance. There may be others of us here who find ourselves in the midst of a storm, or maybe on the heels of one, or maybe about to go into a storm that we don't even know is coming. And maybe we find ourselves feeling alone. No one's in this with me. God's not here. He doesn't feel present. If that's you, the words that you need to hear are, you are not alone. God is in it with you. Jesus was in the boat the whole time, asleep, yes, because he wasn't worried, but he was there, present, the whole time. God's presence and his power, both true in the midst of the storm. As we were on this plane flying back from Hawaii, I think there were parts of me that were giving in to both of these lies. It didn't really feel like God was present. It didn't feel like he was there. I felt lonely and scared. But also God's power. Is God really able? Is he going to step in? Is he able to step in and fix this situation? Or is that on me? Or is all hope lost? Maybe this morning you find yourself somewhere in that space between fear and faith, but looking to Jesus, asking him, inviting him into the storm with you. If you find yourself in that space of being fearful and yet faithful, you know, that's actually not the place that Jesus wants to leave you full stop. It's not where Jesus leaves his disciples full stop. He wants to bring them, he wants to bring us to a deeper place. And we see that as we continue reading. You probably know how the story goes from here if you're familiar with it, but let's look at what Jesus does next, starting halfway through verse 24. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. If you've been around church for a while, if you've heard this story, those words might not really sink in their full force that they're intended to. So let me just read them again for us. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. You know, I grew up in Minnesota where, unlike the Bay Area, we experienced real storms, you know? Not the like, oh, an atmospheric river is coming and we get the sandbags and the sky kind of spits at us a little bit. Now, this is like button down the hatches and take shelter kind of storms. I've seen rain blow horizontal across the lake, right? As the wind rages and the water's out of control. And then the storm blows by and the water becomes like glass, the still after the storm. That is not what happens here. This is not a massive storm blows in and then it blows past and everything is calm. That is not what happens here. This is the disciples wake up Jesus. Master, master, we are perishing. And Jesus wakes up, does a little post-nap stretch, I imagine, and then speaks to the wind and the waves, and there is calm. That's crazy, right? And you know what? It's not even hard for him. It's not even hard for him. He just says the word. He rebukes the wind and the waves, and they stop. This is amazing. In Luke, we've already seen Jesus rebuke a few different things at different points. We saw him rebuke a fever in Peter's mother-in-law, and the fever leaves her, and she is well. Jesus comes to a demon-possessed man, and he rebukes the demon, and the demon flees, and the man is healed and whole. Here, Jesus looks to the wind and the waves, and he rebukes them, and there is a calm. And the message that's been building in the Gospel of Luke and that culminates both in this story and in the ones to come is that there is no force that opposes Jesus that he is not able to rebuke. That there is no sickness, there is no demon, there is no natural disaster that comes against Jesus trying to stop him or get in his way that he is not able to speak to, and the chaos turns into calm. I think there's some here today who need to hear this. Jesus can speak calm into the chaos of your life. There is no situation that you have been in, are currently in, or one day will be in that Jesus cannot wake up from his nap, take a little stretch and look at and say, stop it. Stop it. And it will listen. Nothing can get in the way of Jesus. All of this, of course, is to point to the fact that Jesus is not just some special guy. He's not just a prophet. He's not just the greatest of prophets. He is the one who carries the very power of God. Only God can do this. Only God can do this. So the point of this story is to help us see who Jesus is. Jesus is the one who's present with us in the storm. Jesus is the one with the power over the storm. Jesus is the one, the only one, who has the power to save. You know, it can be easy when we start to hear that God is able, that he's present with us, that he's powerful over the storm. It can be easy to take the jump from there to think that, well, God should calm the storm, or God must calm the storm, or God will calm the storm. But this story is not meant to be an assurance that whatever storm we're experiencing, Jesus will calm it. Rather, this storm is meant to help us understand the nature of the one who we worship, the nature of the one who stands in the storm with us. Not that he will calm every storm that we will experience, but that he is the only one in whom life is found. He is the only one with the power and the ability to save. On that flight on the way back from Hawaii, we saw God show up in a powerful way. And Asher's breathing eventually came under control, and we were able to make it the rest of the flight and drive straight from the airport to the emergency room where he spent the next 12 hours getting the care that he needed. And you know what? I didn't come away from that experience with the assurance that anytime I find myself in that situation or a similar one, that God's gonna do the same thing. No. God doesn't give us that guarantee. This story is not meant to teach us that whatever storm you're in, it's all gonna be okay because Jesus is gonna calm it. No. But I did walk away from that experience having a deeper understanding of the one who is my King and my Savior, the one who is with me in the midst of the storm, who's writing the story and ultimately has risen from the dead, defeating sin and death, making a way for us to be with him forever. These storms, as God steps in, the story that we see here, are meant to refine our understanding of who Jesus is so that we can put our faith in him, experience him more deeply, and grow in our confidence in the character of God, in the character of Jesus, and draw faith from that in the midst of our storms. After Jesus calms this storm, he looks to his disciples and he asks them one question, a very thoughtful, very interesting question. Look here at what Jesus says in verse 25. And he said to them, "Where is your faith? Where is your faith?" And they were afraid and they marveled, saying to one another, "Who then is this? Who then is this that he commands even winds and water and they obey him?" I love this question that Jesus asks. Where is your faith? It's interesting the way Luke describes this. He does it a little bit differently than the other gospels do. In the other gospels, Mark in particular, Jesus comes across a little bit more critical. Right? Why don't you have faith is his question in Mark. Here, Luke kind of casts a little bit different. The question that Jesus asks is, where is your faith? There's a critique there for sure. Jesus is looking for faith, but there's also a curiosity. You see, Jesus has been walking with his disciples for some time now, and he's seen their faith. They have faith. They left everything to follow him. They've seen his miracles. They've seen him heal people, do all kinds of things. Right? They've heard his teachings. They have a growing understanding of who Jesus is, and they have a genuine faith in him, but it's not a faith that's been tested by the storm yet. They've seen Jesus calm other people's storms, but they haven't experienced Jesus calm their storm. And so Jesus says, "Hey, you know the faith you had back there? You know the faith you had when you watched me healing those people, making the lame man walk? You know when I stepped into other people's storms and fixed them? The faith that you had there, what happened to it on the boat? Where is it? Where did it go?" It's a critique, yes, but it's an invitation. An invitation to take this faith that's there and say, "God, I want to apply that here in the midst of my storm." Not knowing exactly how you're gonna resolve this situation, but knowing that you are the one who has the power to command the winds and the waves. He invites the disciples to take their faith and to bring it in to the present situation. Jesus goes out on the boat. He calls his disciples to follow him right into the storm. This story, part of what this story is trying to do is help us to understand, well, what is the purpose of storms? What do we do in the storm? Why is it that Jesus allows us to experience these trials in our lives? I think there's three things that we can pull out for the purpose of storms, why we experience storms and what they can do in our lives. Three things. Storms reveal, storms remind, and storms refine. Storms reveal things about ourselves. Right? They help us to understand the quality and nature of our own faith. Do I really trust Jesus enough, not just in someone else's storm, but in my storm, that when I'm experiencing the wind and the waves, I'm able to look to Jesus, Master, Master, help me. Right? It teaches us, it reveals something about the nature and the quality of our own faith. Storms also remind, they remind us who God is. Right? As we experience storms, as we experience God's presence with us in the midst of challenging things, and as we see God even bring deliverance in many cases, it becomes a reminder of who God is, of who Jesus is, that we worship the one who commands the winds and the waves, that rebukes fevers and they flee, that sends demons running. That is the Jesus that we follow. Storms remind us of that. But storms also refine us. They refine our faith. Like the wind that blows against trees in a storm and makes them stronger, challenges in our lives give us an opportunity to beef up in a way, to grow deeper in dependence on God, to experience his power and presence in tangible ways in the midst of difficult situations, and to take one more step from this space of fear into this world of deep and abiding faith. Storms reveal, storms remind, and storms refine. So I want to leave us this morning with two challenges, two encouragements to take with us. As we go into life, perhaps right back into the middle of the storm, perhaps on the heels of a storm, perhaps in preparation for a storm that we don't know when or where it's going to hit, but two challenges for us. The first, don't waste the storm. The storms of our lives are not just chaos stepping in and taking over. The storms of our lives are opportunities to go deeper with God. There are opportunities to meet him in ways that we just can't when the water is still and the wind is calm. But don't waste the storm. It can be so easy to just try to get past it, to just try to get through it, to even turn away from God in the midst of it. Don't waste the storm. Use it as an opportunity to go deeper with God, deeper in faith, to open up to the power and the presence of the Spirit in your life in a new and deeper way. Don't waste the storm. The second challenge for us is to do what we see the disciples doing at the end of this story, and that is to worship in the storm. To worship in the storm. You see, all of this whole situation brings the disciples to the point where they look at Jesus and they say, who is this? Who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? That's worship, right? They recognize something deep about Jesus, a power that he has. Right? They recognize that this man comes from God with the power of God and that salvation can only be found in him. Who is this? Can we allow the storms of our lives to move us to that place where we fix our eyes on Jesus in a new and deeper way to give honor and glory and power for him, to him, in the ways that he has showed up in our lives, in the way that he showed up in our community, in the way that we've seen him show up for friends and family, for strangers and neighbors? Can we worship Jesus in the storm? I want to end by setting up the song that we're about to sing. And as I do, I want to invite the band to come up. The song that we're going to sing was written in the midst of a storm. It was written by a man named Horatio Spafford. Horatio Spafford was a businessman in Chicago in the 1800s, and he had experienced significant success in life. He was wealthy, he was powerful, he had influence, he had everything you could kind of hope for. But then he encountered a series of storms in his life. It began when his youngest child, his only son, got ill and passed away. It mounted as the great Chicago fires tore through that city and burned down most of his real estate investments, leaving him with a fraction of what he had before. But it culminated when he put his wife and four daughters on a ship to sail over to Europe, and on the way, their ship collided with another ship and sank. And of the five, only his wife survived. Almost everything he had and cherished taken from him in the matter of a few short years. Spafford got on a ship right after he heard from his wife to sail across those same icy Atlantic waters that had taken his four daughters. And as they got close, out into the middle of the ocean, the captain let them know, we're close to the area where that ship sank. And as the story goes, as they crossed these waters and as Horatio reflected on the nature of the God that he knew and the horror of the tragedy that he had experienced, he penned words that are likely familiar to most of us. It is well with my soul. Though Satan should buffet, it is well with my soul. When sorrows like sea billows roar, it is well with my soul. You see, Spafford didn't have a faith that required God to calm the storm in his life in the way that he wanted. That did not happen for him. But he had the faith that said, even when that doesn't happen, I know the one who commands the wind and the waves. I know the one in whom salvation is found. And because of that, he was able to write these words, "It is well with my soul." I want to invite you to stand as we continue in worship, singing these words together.